You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association, N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back and we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. Here to talk UFC Phoenix, our main event is Francis Ngannou taking on Cain Velasquez. We are here to break down this card top to bottom, all things DraftKings. I am your host, the Daily Fantasy Sniper, joined as always with our analysts for Fight IQ, Chris Olsen and Joe Sunsu. Guys, we had a pretty good card last week. I'm assuming you guys also made money and looking to roll on with it this week.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with it. And one of the major things I was happy with last week was I finished in first place in my DFS World Cup group. That means I have a bye week this week. So I'm relaxing on that and just putting all of my energy into Sean's tournament, the DFS Ironman, try to get some points. Finished just outside with no points last week. So we're going to try to fix that with a pretty interesting card with a lot of interesting fights. So ready to go.
Well, yeah. I did not make money last week, guys. So I'm happy you guys did. Well, look, I mean, we went down to 11 fights, and unfortunately, I did not know about the cancellation until about an hour and a half before. So I had to go through and change multiple lineups. I had a number of dupes. And then, of course, to add insult to injury, when I realized I had an extra 30 minutes left because they delayed the start time from 6:30 to 7, I went in and I swapped out my lineup that I put in the World Cup to a somewhat more conservative lineup that included Asanya in it. And as it turned out, that lineup ended up shitting the bed. All favorites won last week. I needed Asanya to put up. I think if he scored 103, I would have been nicely in the money. And as we know, he did not score close to that. So it was not a great week for me.
I made plenty of cash, but I finished first in my World Cup group. But the previous 2 weeks, I did so bad it didn't matter. I still didn't advance, but I got some points in Ironman. So if you guys are in that, the standings, I'm always posting them. Actually, quick PSA: if you are in that, in my creating the contest this week, I tried to edit the name to name it correctly at the last second, and DraftKings still created two contests. One is named MMA Ironman.
I saw that.
UFC Phoenix, and one is just Free Contest by Cactus Jack 2. Everybody, please join the one that's named UFC Phoenix. I've been going through every day, sometimes twice a day, inviting everyone who hasn't joined the right contest. If there are any issues, I'm going to go through and take care of those people. But just if you have already registered, just make sure you're in the right contest. Do appreciate that. And while we're doing PSA, since we're talking, getting ready to break down these fights on this fight card from top to bottom, podcast is brought to you by RotoWire, RotoWire MMA. Make sure you go to rotowire.com/free. Get your 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required. All sports, daily fantasy, season-long. Make sure and check them out. If you want to follow us and all of our shenanigans on Twitter, we've had some good back and forth. I know me and Chris had one earlier. Joe's always good for something, especially with there being four women's MMA fights on this card. Make sure and follow all of us on Twitter. I'm at the DFS Sniper, 1S in that. Chris is at Real Chris Olsen. Joe is at Sun Tzu, SunTzu. We record these live on Friday nights. Guys in chat, welcome back. If you're listening to this after the fact on the RotoWire MMA iTunes or SoundCloud feed, as I mentioned, we record these live on Friday nights. Jump in chat. Always here to answer questions. You guys who are here, ask away, chat away, and let's get to some fights. And we're going to start right away with a fight that is causing me a bit of a headache because I had a pretty clear – I still do have a pretty clear picture in my mind how it's going to go, and the lines keep going the other way. It's Alexandra Albu at 8,600 taking on Emily Spitfire Whitmire at 7,600. Albu opened up at minus 170, down to minus 125. The comeback on Whitmire's plus 105. We have some odds value here. I'm not seeing it. I love Alexandra Albu in this matchup, but I will refer to the women's MMA expert on the podcast. Joe, start us off this week.
I sort of get it. I mean, you know, Whitmire's been a bit more active. She's more public in terms of how she trains. We really don't know what Albu's been doing for the last 2 years. I mean, she is like an over-muscular power fighter without a whole lot of technique who, look, destroyed Caitlin Curran, but I mean, so is everybody else. So I do sort of get it. I mean, it's not knowing whether she's improved over the last 2 years, you know, training somewhere in Russia. I heard she had visa issues. I mean, it's all kinds of like, you know, like hidden narrative around this fight. And you know, you just don't know if she's improved in the last 2 years. And we did see that all that muscle slows her down later in fight. So I'm not going to necessarily go as far as picking Whitmire here, but I do get some of the line movement. And because of the odds value, I will have a few more shares of Whitmire than I originally thought I would have. I just kind of set some allocations now and probably a little bit less of Albu. I will, with a low mid confidence range factor or variable, pick Albu to win here, but there's a lot of variables here. I would not like hang my hat too hard on her without knowing what she's been doing for the last 2 years.
Somebody in chat said they can't wait to see the Russian Instagram butt models every 2 year appearance, which I thought was a good line.
Yep.
And then if she was more of a sub threat, she'd be more interesting to me. I don't need the sub threat because she has so much volume. Yes, she's wild. Yes, she did gas against Caitlin Curran, and that's my worry in this fight is could she gas again, and could she get caught in a sloppy submission?
Before Chris goes to add insult to injury, I don't think Albu has the best ass on this card, so we will come up with that shortly. She does not, in my opinion.
I'm gonna stick to the fights here because as I said, Albu. I have a bet on Albu with much worse odds than where they are now, so I'm trying to justify it. Just plenty of volume is just super strong. Should be able to take down Emily Whitmire as long as she doesn't get subbed. I think she wins this fight, but. Actually, I know Chris agrees because this is what we had our back and forth on Albu because there's no odds value here, and I think I'm still going to play her, and it's going to be me and Chris Olsen against the world, and that's terrifying.
Yeah, no, we definitely bonded over this fight. It was nice. I just think that Whitmire, as I noted on Twitter, she was 1-4 in her amateur MMA career, which just – I mean, if I liked her – based on tape, I would still pick her. That wouldn't stop me. But I just have to note how strange that was because I've never seen somebody with such a bad losing record in amateur fights go on to get pro fights. She's now 3-2 as a pro, I believe. I mean, so it's not like she's been setting the world on fire since she came here. She had that quick armbar sub loss on the Ultimate Fighter finale. Then they had the fight with who was it? Aguilar, Jessica Aguilar. So, My problem is I don't really know what she does all that well. In the Aguilar fight, Aguilar has a tendency to just have to really get in the pocket to land all her strikes. Whitmire would just flurry counter combinations and land sometimes and hit some reactive shots. But other than that, even Aguilar was having some success when
You gotta stop. Aguilar?
Well, who was it? I thought it was that. Was it
Whitmire faced Jamie Moyle.
Jamie Moyle.
I'm sorry.
It was Escabel and Aguilar.
Okay. Good note. Okay. Jamie Moyle. So everything I say stands except it's Jamie Moyle. So, but in that fight, she tends to have to, as I said, really get in the pocket to land her strikes, which opened her up for counters, which Whitmire was landing. But she had reactive takedowns too. But I just think that Albu is, as we said, too powerful. She's going to be way more physical. She's actually good at keeping people on the end of her punches. And, you know, she might not have like a fantastic sub game, but one of her wins in the UFC is actually by submission, was actually a guillotine choke when somebody was trying to take her down. So there's that. I just think that Albu's going to be able to overwhelm her. And I don't see Whitmire as having any clear skills to make that otherwise. So the gassing could be an issue, but it's not a worry at the top of my list. I'm taking Albu.
All right, let's move on to a barf-tacular fight. Luke Sanders, 8,700, taking on 2019 Henan Barao at 7,500. Luke Sanders is a minus 185 favorite over Henan Barao. I never thought I'd see the day, but Henan Barao is losing to guys like Andre Yule. Like, the odds are kind of justified. Lost to Andre Yule, lost to Brian Kelleher. And we got Luke Sanders, the fight IQ of a rock. It's just an odd fight. They're both going to want to stand and trade. That's where Sanders will have any kind of success. Barao in 2019, I can't trust him on the feet. He's always getting outstruck by Andre Yule. So where do we go? I go to they're going to stand for three rounds. I think it's going to be close. Ultimately, I'm picking Luke Sanders to win, but I won't roster him at all. And I'll take the shot on Barao in some lineups in a close fight for 7,500. Chris, do you agree with that?
Yeah, pretty much. It's just so hard to pick Barao these days. Even when we said or we thought that he might try to be a committed wrestler, which he was for periods of that Andre Yule fight, it left him so terribly gassed for the third round. He was just eating strike after strike and not even really throwing anything back. Very flat-footed, and I mean Andre Yule's just too quick and crisp of a striker to do that against, and he just lit him up. I see Luke Sanders as doing kind of the same thing as long as he can stay on his feet, just really pouring on that pressure and throws good combinations. He has decent power, and I think he could have tripped Barao in pretty much the same way. I expect Barao to try to use his wrestling again, and we know that Sanders has been subbed in the UFC, of course. Most recently, the heel hook from Yaya. Before that, the knee bar from Yuri Alcantara. So, you know, definitely a possibility. It's hard to trust at this point, but, you know, because we've seen Luke Sanders taken down and sub before, and that's Barao's smartest game plan, I think that maybe there might be some value on him just because he's lost so many times. I don't think people will be picking Luke Sanders per se, but I think they might just wash out of this fight and wash their hands of it. So I think Barao could be a nice dog play there if people haven't trusted him and if you trust him to use his wrestling.
I don't think he uses his wrestling. Does he finally win a decision on the feet? Joe?
I'm really more looking forward to the pre-fight ceremony where Paul Felder actually gets to hand off his dunce cap to Luke Sanders is having the worst fight IQ in the UFC. So that's something I'm really looking forward to.
I know we make these jokes, but I think we can't anymore because Andre Sukumta is still in the UFC.
Well, yeah.
That's worse. Stand
I
up.
I still have to get – well, Sukumta beat Sanders, which is why I have to give it to Sanders.
Yeah, worst fight IQ, though.
There's some narrative – you know, around Luke Sanders that actually makes me like him even less than I already did. One is obviously he broke up with his famous, you know, WWE girlfriend, Becky Lynch. He also became a full-time and sole dad, which is makes him a good human being, but doesn't actually bode well for training. Left his camp in Nashville, went to Arizona. The lab, you say? No, not the MMA lab. The Henry Cejudo camp, which is essentially, you know, all dedicated to Henry Cejudo. So I cannot trust Sanders here. And I did see some of the old brow in the last fight early on. I think he has enough here. I obviously love his price on DK, so I am not saying to fade Sanders. I will have a few shares of Sanders, but I'm going to pick Burrell for the win.
I think Joe, by the way, is a max multi guy. If you don't know, I think you're playing under 20 lineups. I have a hard time getting Sanders in personally.
I just ran my first 20 and I have him in 4 lineups, I think, out of 20.
Gotcha. That seems like a lot to me, but it will be different. He will not be popular. Sure. All right. Jessica Penne, 8,400, taking on Jody Escobel at 7,800. Penny's the favorite, minus 140. Escobel the dog, plus 120. I started this week. Look, actually, I can break this fight down really quickly. I think skill for skill, Penny's the better fighter, but she's got the one with all the narrative that Joe's going to go over. Hasn't fought in a long time. Popped by USADA. Lost to Danielle Taylor, who throws similar to Escobel in that moves in and throws in combinations, whereas Taylor is way faster. Escobel just throws harder. Penny should have the advantage on the ground, and I'm going back to picking her, but I was hesitant at the start of the week because of all this outside the cage crap. So Joe, do you have any extra insight to this outside the cage, you know, shenanigans that Jessica Penny's been dealing with for the last 2 years now?
Well, okay. So just like, let's get out of the way. You know, Jessica Penne has the best ass on this card. She is the backdrop for the Creating Alpha Twitter page. That is Jessica Penne. So let's get that out of the way. 36 years old, black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, trains at Alliance, love her camp. By the way, very funny on her Two Straws YouTube video where her and Angela Hill do fight selections. Jessica Penne has fought much better competition, former Invicta champ. Yes, she's 36 years old. She has more than enough here to beat Jody Escobel, either on the ground or standing. We all know she can take a hell of a lot of punishment. I do not see Escobel dishing out the same level of punishment that Jessica Penne has taken in the past. Yes, the layoff is of concern, but I believe she lives in San Diego, so she's pretty much been training the entire time, you know, with Angela Hill and others at Alliance. I think Pearl Gonzalez is there too, if I'm not mistaken. You know, she's got some good training partners. I don't think much of Escobel. Look, she's married to the Dean Amin, Keith Jardine, trades at Jackson Wank, which is obviously a good camp. But I don't think she's at that stage in her career where she's getting any better. And she was dominated by Aguilar, just dominated. And then Aguilar, in turn, got smoked in her. And maybe that was the recency bias that I bought into, you know, thinking that Aguilar had a chance in her next fight, which makes Escobel look all that much worse. And Aguilar trains at AT&T. So bringing it back full circle, I'm picking Penne to win. I just don't know what kind of score she's going to put up. But I will suspect that given who surrounds her on DK, that she will be very low-owned. So I would say have a share or two of Penne in case she really does destroy Escobel. But, you know, not too much. Penne to win.
Chris?
Yeah, it must be a full moon or something because we actually agree exactly on this fight, Sean. I actually think it's going to be a lot like that Danielle Taylor fight with Penne just pressuring and trying to land her strikes and Escobel with the lateral in and out movement and just firing shots and then just not being there on the return.
Well, there's one difference. I want to see what you think because the difference where I think the reason I've switched my pick is what I mentioned is that I think Escobel fights a similar style to Taylor, but she's nowhere near as fast. And I think at some point, Penne is going to trap her against the cage. And Joe said she's a black belt in BJJ. She's a brown belt in judo. And if she catches Escobel, it's going to be a problem. She was taken down by Aguilar.
She's not as fast. I agree 100%. I don't think she has to be. I think she's fast enough. I just think that look, we've seen Esquivel. You know, she has pretty decent takedown defense, and I just don't know that. And it's been a while too since we've seen Penne even try to get a fight to the ground. Maybe that's just a consequence of her opponents recently, but you know, I just don't think you can have confidence that Penne is going to come out and like wrestle or even try to get this fight to the ground. If she doesn't, I don't really see her on winning a stand up battle, just because, you know, she's such a sort of a slow wooden striker. So I don't like this fight for DK basically anywhere, because I think even if Esquivel wins, it's just going to be a really like slow, drawn out, like single shot, like point based decision. But I think the winner is going to be Esquivel.
Really? Esquivel.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's move on. We got Scott Holtzman, 8,500, taking on Nick Vicarney Lentz at 7,700. Holtzman, the favorite, minus 170. The comeback on Lentz is plus 150. If you've listened to any of my podcasts since I started doing this, any of my YouTube videos where Nick Lentz is in the card, you know what I think of him as a fighter and as a person. Yeah, I'm taking Scott Holtzman here. I'm hoping the Alan Patrick domination wasn't a flash in the pan, and I'm going to take Holtzman pretty comfortably, who I do think overall he's just better. The two guys he's lost to are Josh Emmett and Drew Dober. I think Drew Dober's underrated, especially on the feet. So give me Holtzman in this one. Chris?
Yeah, well, I think I agree with you on half of that there, Sean, but as far as Nick Lentz goes. But as far as this fight goes, the one thing that I like about Lentz recently is he seems to really have sort of a functional kickboxing game now where he didn't before. I would say at least the past like three or four fights. And he's also pretty quick. You know, he's a decent counter striker. He's good at darting in and out and throwing counter hooks. Holtzman is also a good counter striker. So he could conversely clip Nick Lentz coming in as well. I think the problem is that Nick Lentz is just a little bit too upright and stiff for me as a striker. And I think that Lentz should just be able to move around him and land his shots. I will say, though, that most people who have tried to take down Nick Lentz, even though we think of him as the grappler, most people, or a grappler, we know Holtzman's a grappler too, but most people who have tried to take down Nick Lentz have done so. And Holtzman's top game is pretty crushing. He's a big dude for this weight class. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that Holtzman could take it down to the ground and have success. I think Lentz is going to have the success on the feet. As much as I hate to do it, I think I'm picking Lentz here just barely. I just think he's going to have more success on the feet, and I think he's going to be maybe a good enough grappler to withstand those exchanges. So I think I'm going Lentz.
So how about for you?
Yeah, so Holtzman has scored over 100 DraftKings points in his last three fights. Yes. Mm-hmm. Two of those were against Horcher and McBride. He is an A-plus athlete, former hockey player. Quick story, quick narrative. Holtzman used to fight for a promotion called XFC. He was like their marquee signing. That was a promotion that was co-founded and was run by an high school classmate of mine, John Prisco. That was their marquee signing in XFC, Holtzman. So Holtzman has been around for a little while. The Alan Patrick fight, I view as his coming out party. He trains at a really good camp. What is it off the top of my head? He trains at that doesn't seem right. I'm pretty sure he switched camps.
We'll find it for you, Joe.
Yeah, I know. It said Shield, but I don't think it's Shield. I think he's at a named camp now. I want to say Alpha Male, but I'm not positive. But anyway, I think Holtzman is clearly the harder hitter, which means I give him a stand-up advantage. Look, Greg Maynard actually got in and was able to hit Lentz. I think Holtzman, if he connects, he's also got some good takedowns. I see one path to victory for Lentz, and that is getting Holtzman to fall into his guard and putting a guillotine on him. That's really the only way I see Lentz winning. I think he's worth a share or two in mess entry. But I like Holtzman. I actually like him in cash. You know, he has racked up some decent points, and I think Patrick is a better fighter than Nick Lenz is. So in some ways, I see this as a step down for Holtzman. So
Holtzman. Joe, real quick, MMA lab for Scott Holtzman.
Okay, so yeah, he did move to the lab. Okay, so Scott Holtzman is at the lab now. Got it. I knew it was. I knew it was. It was a local fight for him. Okay, there you go.
Andrea KGB Lee 8900 taking on Ashley Evan Smith at 7300. KGB Lee minus 160. Comeback on AES is plus 140. Overall, I think Lee's the better technical fighter. Ashley Evan Smith is larger, and if she can, her path to victory is being to bully KGB Lee in the clinch. I just don't see it happening. Ultimately, I think Lee's technique wins out, and I think she will be the better ground fighter should it get there. Joe, how do you have this one?
I like KGB as well. I think she's belted in both judo and Brazilian jiu-jitsu, has solid Muay Thai game. You know, AES is a bit of a head case. I mean, you know, people are saying, you know, her best win is against Marion Renault. If anyone remembers, she did not win that fight. That was one of, I put that in the top two, if not the worst judge's decision of the entire year when she got that win. I think Renault actually even went to the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission to get it overturned. That's how bad that decision was. Like I said, bit of a head case here. I think KGB is technically better. It surprises me to hear that Ashley Evan Smith has got some collegiate wrestling, which I've never really seen her put all that much to use. I like Angela KGB Lee here. The question is, you know, on DraftKings, how do you use her? I kind of like her in cash. I don't know that she's going to be able to get the finish here. She might be risky at her price point in GPPs. And maybe for that reason, if it was to go to decision and AES could squeak it out a decision at, 7.3K, she might be worth one or two shares in mass entry GPPs. But I do like KGB to win, and I do like her in cash.
Chris?
I always like to go back and see what my pick was and my reasoning was for the last time I picked a fighter. I picked KGB in her last fight against Macedo. The reason I did that, there was basically one reason I did it, and it was because I thought she was going to be just big enough to out-physical her in the grappling, and that's basically what happened. In this fight, I think Ashley Evan Smith could win just by being not only the bigger fighter, but the much more technical grappler. Against the fence, she uses double underhook. She has good head pressure. As Joe said, I mean, not as much as like a formal wrestling takedown artist with double legs and single legs and stuff, more like, you know, trips and, you know, body lock takedowns. But, I really think that more technical grappling and physical strength is going to go a long way. I also think that while KGB is probably the more technical striker, if you just come forward on her and throw strikes and back her up, you can get her flustered into the clinch. That was happening a lot more in that Macedo fight than I thought. I thought KGB was going to have a huge striking advantage there. Didn't really look that way on film. So I'm just not sure I can take KGB, even though she may be and probably is the more technical striker. I don't think she is going to use that to just sort of dominate and take over a fight, or at least we haven't seen it. And that goes for some of her Invicta fights too. So as much as it kind of worries me to pick Ashley Evan Smith, I think I'm doing it just by virtue of the grappling and the way that KGB gets herself in these exchanges, where I don't think she's going to be able to win scrambles as easy as she did against someone like Macedo. So
hey, Chris, would it surprise you that KGB actually has a reach advantage over Ashley Evan Smith, and the disparity in height is only 2 inches, which is exactly the reach advantage that KGB has? And also, I will go on the record now and say that KGB is actually going to be the physically stronger fighter, you know, in the ring.
Well, I don't know about that, but
yeah, that's all I'm worried about. Like, that's all I can't really tell on tape is if KGB is going to be able to outmuscle her.
She will. I am going to go out there and guarantee you that she will get at least one judo takedown. And to get a judo takedown, you have to be stronger than your opponent. So I see KGB as getting at least one judo takedown, and she has a 2-inch reach advantage. And the height disadvantage is only 2 inches.
Interesting. All right, let's move on to somebody asked this in chat. This is, aside from the main event, my favorite GPP fight on the card. Manny Bermudez, 9,100, taking on Benito Lopez at 7,100. Fight is minus 300 to end inside the distance. Manny Bermudez is your favorite, minus 190. Benito Lopez, the comeback, is plus 165. It is your classic striker. There's really, if any of you, either of you, Chris, try to overanalyze this fight, I'm going to lose my mind because it is pretty classic, cut and dry, striker versus grappler. Lopez is dynamic on the feet. Bermudez, dominant ground game, has pulled guard, will continue to pull guard. This fight hits the mat, Bermudez will tear through him. Lopez will have the advantage on the feet. And we've seen Bermudez hurt and dropped in the UFC. Albert Morales dropped Manny Bermudez. He popped back up, eventually pulled guard in that fight. And what happens first? Does Bermudez get it to the ground or does Bermudez get knocked out? Great GPP fight. A fight like that, the underdog 7,100. I always side with the grappler. I'm still picking Bermudez to win this fight, but I love this fight for GPPs. I'll have plenty of Benito Lopez, if not more, just for his potential ceiling. Chris, I'll let you analyze the fight, but let's not go crazy, friend.
I guess I got to throw out all my notes now. Thanks a lot, guys.
Good. It's pretty simple, this one. In all seriousness, this is a simple fight.
Well, I just want to start off by saying, like, what is his name? Manny Bermudez. Thank you. Manny Bermudez is a guy that I might lose. I might pick wrong against every time because I really just don't like him at all. I mean, I of course accept that he's a superior grappler on the floor, but as you mentioned, Sean, he tries to just walk through and he gets hurt a lot. You know, he knocked out Davy Grant with, you know, sort of a fake left hook right hand that connected. And I feel like I was watching that fight. I was like, man, he must have had like one trick coming in on the feet and it actually worked. And then he was able to just get the sub. I don't think that's going to happen here just because Lopez is a good mover and he's quick on his feet. I don't like his stand-up game so much either. It's way too much like jumping knees and spinning kicks and things like that. But I think that once he has you hurt, or he thinks he does, he's good at, you know, piling on and trying to finish. And I think that's probably what's going to happen here if he doesn't get taken down or get guard pulled first or finds the floor in some way. I think maybe he hurts Bermudez with like a head kick and then maybe moves in for a finish. Obviously he can get to the ground and Manny Bermudez could finish that way, but I can't pick that way just because he's such a sieve on the feet. So I'm going to take Benito Lopez by stoppage.
Joe?
Yeah, I mean, wow, this is really – I'm a little concerned here that I'm agreeing with Chris.
There you go.
But, I am influenced in great part, and I should get this out of the way, by Brett Apley, who has, you know, not only followed Benito Lopez's career, but has also rolled with him, you know, in jiu-jitsu. And look, Alpha Male, I like his camp. Bermudez has really got one way to win, as far as I see it. I don't see him winning any striking exchanges. I mean, he's got to catch him in the submission, excuse me. And I think he has to catch him early. I think the longer this fight goes, the momentum, the more dangerous it's going to be for Bermudez, or the Bermuda Triangle, as he likes to be known. I think this should be an exciting fight. It's a good fight to target. I would have shares of both on DraftKings. However, my selection is Benito Lopez.
By the way, somebody, Paul Shag mentioned it on Twitter, like picking Benito Lopez. If you heard Brett talk about, you know, that he's rolled with Benito, I heard that before. Like,
oh, it's not the only reason.
I know, but you knew Brett was going to take
Lopez. I did. Everybody knew.
So, I'm not giving out any competitor picks. If you just, right. I mean, everybody knew Brett was going there.
Yep.
All right, we have a fight. I'm actually interested to see what you guys think of this fight because this is one I've was going back and forth on, and I've made my pick. And now, as I build lineups, this is a fight I just keep falling to. This fight and our co-main. But let's start off with Jimmy Rivera, 8,300, taking on Aljamain Sterling at 7,900. Rivera, the favorite, minus 145. Comeback on Aljo is plus 125. For me, I am siding with the underdog right now. I like Aljamain Sterling in that I think he'll have a grappling advantage. I think he's going to be faster than Jimmy Rivera, use his kicks, and stay at range. I know Joe hates the camp. He hates us Long Island guys. But Sterling has turned it around, and I think he has the physical tools to win this one. Like I said, the grappling should be good, and the range should be good. Where Rivera will be strong if this fight ends up in boxing range, I think Rivera has better hands. That is where I will concede. I am giving a slight lean to Aljamain Sterling in this fight, but what I'm struggling with is how much do I play each of these guys. So, Joe, do you agree with the fight breakdown, and how are you approaching this fight?
I don't really want a lot of this fight. I mean, neither one of these guys are known as DraftKings gold. I will say that Aljo has looked better. You know, he looked good in the fight I saw in Atlantic City. I think Jimmy Rivera hits harder. I think if anybody's going to get a finish, it's going to be Jimmy Rivera. The one thing that is pulling me somewhat off of Aljo is Rivera's got such solid takedown defense. He's got such a low center of gravity. You know, obviously Aljo will be the taller and longer fighter, but, you know, Rivera's like a fire hydrant. I mean, the guy is short. He's low to the ground. He hits hard. He's got boxing pedigree. This could be like a relatively boring three-round decision where the winner scores, you know, 60 points absent takedowns. You know, I don't want a lot of this. I would probably in mass entry have a little bit more Jimmy Rivera than Aljo, but I will pick, we need to pick a winner here, so I will pick Rivera to get the win.
Chris?
Yeah, I kind of agree with both of you in certain spots. My pick is Aljo, but I also agree that I don't really want so much of this fight. I just think that, look, I agree that Rivera is the harder puncher. I love his boxing skills, the way he can come in and sort of strike and change angles and throw in combination and really pressure the opponent. But I do think the length is going to be somewhat of an issue. And I think that Aljamain Sterling is good enough to stay on the outside and use that length. I think he's been really good at doing that, especially in recent fights. I don't really see this finishing because if you see Aljo winning, it's kind of hard to see a finish. I don't think that Aljo is going to sub Rivera. I think the more likely scenario is he just picks him apart from range and scores sort of a lackluster three-round decision. So the pick is Aljamain Sterling, but it's one that, you know, I think is kind of forgettable for DK.
All right, moving on. We have Miles Jury, 8,800 against the chalk. Andre Feely at 7,400. Miles Jury is the favorite, -145. Feely, the line is down to +125. Got some odds value there. This is chalk I'm going to eat. Before I broke down the fights and then looked at lines, I was surprised at the line on Andre Feely. I have a bet on Andre Feely. Look, Feely loses to superior strikers, which Miles Jury is not. Miles Jury is a slow striker. Andre Feely loses to guys like Michael Johnson and Calvin Kattar, and there's another good one, and Yair Rodriguez. Like that, he has some other losses on his resume, but those are the kind of guys he loses to. He beat Dennis Bermudez. Look, he's going to be able to keep this fight on the feet. He trains a Team Alpha Male. He's not a dominant top pressure grappler, but he's got enough to stay away from Miles Jury and defend the takedown. And on the feet, that's where I think Jury won't have anything for him. So especially in cash games, I am eating the chalk in Andre Feely. He's my pick at 7,400. Chris, how do you see this fight? Are you taking the chalk underdog?
No, I've agreed with you quite enough for one day, I think.
Are you really going to play Miles Jury?
I am, yeah.
Please tell me how.
Andre Feely is such weird chalk for me. I mean, the first thing you notice when you watch enough of Andre Feely's fights is that he's not as dynamic of a striker as you think he might be based on the length and the bouncing around and stuff. Basically, he's got a jab, he's got a right hand, and he's got a high kick. And he sort of varies them up, but that's basically all he does. That's why he started getting tagged up by Michael Johnson, is because he started to fall into these rogue combinations. And I think that Miles Jury, I agree that Andre Feely's faster. I mean, I would also say that as he gets tired in the second, third round, that bounce in his step starts to go away, and he's a lot more flat-footed than he is when he opens up. So that's interesting. But I think that Miles Jury is a decent I would say a nice counter striker. I like how he moves off on angles and fires the counter shot. Obviously, he's going to be a much better grappler than Andre Fili is. I do see some of this fight being contested against the cage. I think that's where Jerry's going to get his takedowns. And I think the main disconnect for me is I don't see Fili as good of a striker as everybody else seems to. He's okay. I mean, he's not bad, but he's just not the guy that I think that he kind of appears to be when, as I said, you see him and he's bouncing around and he's got all that length. I think he's pretty rote and I think he's pretty predictable. And while he might be a little faster than Jerry, I think Jerry has enough, especially with the counter punching, to, you know, maybe even surprise him a little bit. So, yeah, that's why I'm going Jerry.
Joe?
Yeah, I think I'm eating the chalk here as well. You know, Miles Jury doesn't really beat anybody. Look, it's funny because his losses are all to his wins have been against inferior competition. I don't know if you can actually, obviously, I don't put Fili at the same level as Oliveira, Cerrone, and Mendez, which are Jury's last three losses. But I may put him slightly ahead of Rick Glenn, Mike Delatorre, and, you know, Takanori Gomi. I might put him, slightly ahead of those guys. So what does that mean? I think you guys did a good job of analyzing the fight. I mean, Fili is much higher output standing. Jury is obviously has the jiu-jitsu game. I don't know if he's a better wrestler than Fili, though. Fili is an alpha male guy. They got some great wrestlers up there. They train wrestling. I don't know. I think the wrestling might cancel each other out. So I see Fili winning this as a stand-up fight striking. However, if he does get into some precarious ground positions, I would not be surprised if Jury could throw up a sub. He just looked so bad in his last fight against Mendez. Mendez coming off of a very long layoff. Just literally nuked Jury. And that, I think, closed pretty close to Pick'em, that fight. So there is some recency bias there and how badly Jury got nuked. I am going to take Fili here. I mean, it's not an overly confident play, but I think he can eke out a standing decision here.
All right, let's move on to Vicente Luque, 9,400, taking on Brian Barberena at 6,800. Most expensive fighter on the card, Luque is -460, Barberena +365. Look, everyone has finally come aboard the hype train that I've been singing for a few fights. It's nice when you get – I've been wrong about plenty of fighters. I was wrong about Junior Albini, so I'll take that one on the chin, but then you have to allow me a victory lap when I get someone like Vicente Luque right. Kid is the real deal. He came into the UFC and he lost to Michael Graves, and he has rebounded quick, fast, and in a hurry. 7-1 since then, putting people to sleep, knocked out Bilal Muhammad. Quick submission or slick submission against Nico Price. Hits hard, good subs, good wrestling, good boxing. Moves forward. Brian Barberena is nothing if he is not tough. I've said it before. I don't like when that's your best quality. That's what it is. Can he wear out Vicente Luque to a win? I don't think he's going to be able to out-wrestle Vicente Luque and grind on him for three rounds. Maybe I suspect he's going to try and work the clinch, but I think Luque is just going to be too strong there. So I like Luque. It's a matter of the same conversation we always have. How much of the most expensive fighter on the card can you afford to roster? But what's interesting is right below him, we have Cron Gracie and Cynthia Calvillo, who we're going to talk about in a little while, so I won't spoil them. But compared to those two, Luque is clear and away my favorite pick on this card. Joe, what do you got?
Yeah, so Luque will be my highest owned fighter. I can say that pretty definitively, even though I haven't finished picking up my lineups yet. Honestly, I think Brian Barberena, Bam Bam, I think his toughness actually makes Luque, oddly enough, a really good DraftKings play because he could literally knock the crap out of Bam Bam. And we saw what Covington take him down 11, 12 times and rack up a lot of points, even in the decision. So if he does catch him and he gets the early finish, I mean, look, he's better everywhere. Stand up on the ground. He trained in Brazil for this camp. He can knock him out and get that 100 points. Or he could just beat the ever-loving crap out of him over the course of three rounds, maybe get a few knockdowns, throw a crap load of significant strikes, maybe even do some groundwork and get his 100 points there. So I really like Luque here. He's going to be my highest-owned fighter. I would have maybe, I think, one share of Bam Bam if I was doing 20 lineups, but Luque will be my highest-owned fighter. He is my favorite pick of the night, which is not saying much at his price point, but I do like him a lot.
Chris?
Yeah. There's really only two ways Barbarina wins fights. Basically, he's either going to run through you or he's going to outlast you until you get tired, and he's going to beat you that way. I don't really see either one happening here. We did see Luque get a little tired in that fight against Leon Edwards, so that's a concern. But Leon Edwards is by far the more dominant striker, the better grappler. He's got length. He's got way more things that Luque would have had to deal with. And Barbarina is just such a slow striker. And Luque is not only fast, but he's a really good counterpuncher. So Barbarina's fast. He's never been knocked out. He does have a sub loss on his record, if I remember correctly. And we know Luque can do that too. We know he's good with the Bravo chokes and the Darce chokes and all that stuff. But that would be your one concern, I guess, is if Luque is just tough enough to do. I mean, if Bam Bam is just tough enough to sort of do the Homer Simpson thing and then tire him out and then maybe go from there. But I don't think you can really bank on that. If that happens, it happens. But I just think Luque has way too many advantages here, and I think most likely it's going to end in a stoppage loss for Luque.
All right, let's move on to Cron Gracie, 9,300, taking on Alex Caceres at 6,900. Line on this fight, Cron Gracie minus 280, Caceres plus 240. Another fight that's easy to analyze. Cron Gracie is 3-0 as a pro, has not fought since December 31st of 2016, as you would expect with the last name Gracie. BJJ legend, like world-class guy. The second this fight hits the ground, Caceres is in trouble. Caceres is going to try and use his range and stay away in his quickness. He's 14-11 as an MMA pro. I think Caceres will clearly have the advantage in the feet, but at some point this fight hits the ground and Gracie will get a sub. I just don't know if it'll be a first round, and that to me takes away all the upside of Cron Gracie. So Gracie's the pick, but I'm not sure I want a ton of a UFC 3-0 UFC debutant on DraftKings. Chris?
Yeah, I can't pick Cron Gracie, and it has nothing to do, well, not everything to do with my Alex Caceres fandom, but it does have to do with, look, I don't know if you guys watched his Ryzen fights, but and I'm not the first person to say this, but it's so hard for me to believe that a game like an MMA game like Cron Gracie's can be viable in 2019. It's at the highest level. It's just weird to me. Basically, if you haven't seen his Ryzen fights, what he does is against really old competition, by the way, is try to get into a clinch position, dirty box a little bit, and then pull guard. I literally don't think I've ever seen him execute a takedown. I may have missed one or two in there, in all fairness, but fights I saw, all he tries to do is pull guard. And Alex Caceres is going to be quick. He's going to be moving around. We've seen him taken down before, of course, but you know, everybody's had to work for those takedowns. He doesn't just give them up. Does Gracie have the kind of pressure that he's going to be able to wall Caceres in the way he could do to, you know, Kawajiri? You know, I really don't think so. I don't think Caceres is going to be nearly – I know he's not going to be nearly as flat-footed as any of the opponents that Cron Gracie has fought so far. And I just have a hard time believing guard pulling can work against a guy who's at points in the UFC, I mean, record notwithstanding, has looked like a pretty formidable striker. I mean, he can change angles and use his reach and And I think that's going to come in handy here. He's got to avoid the ground, of course, goes without saying. But I just think even in those fights, Gracie's taking a little damage, and this is going to be by far his best opponent. I can't pick Cron Gracie here. I'm going to take Caceres for the stoppage.
I just think at some point it hits the mat. But I get what you're saying. It's hard to argue too much. Joe?
Yeah, it's pretty bold. You know, I everything you guys say makes sense. I mean, you know, I think this is, you know, this is the first guy, you know, that Gracie is fighting that isn't either 40 years old or, you know, just got out of puberty. I really don't know what to do here. I mean, I don't know if he's been improving. I know the narrative is, you know, he's been training with the Diazes up in Stockton. You know, I don't know that anyone like goes to Stockton on purpose other than to train. So I don't know how long he's been training with the Diazes and what he's actually learned. You have to think that the UFC is maybe giving Gracie a fight that they think he can win. Not that that doesn't always backfire. You know, Caceres, Bruce Leroy, I mean, he lasted five rounds with Yair in a main event in, I think it was in Mexico City, wasn't it? At altitude. So, you know, the guy's got cardio. I'm going to have a couple of shares of Cron just in case he does get that early finish. I will have a share or two of Caceres in case he ekes out a decision. It's not my favorite fight to target, but I will, with some trepidation, pick Gracie to win.
All right, let's go to Cynthia Calvillo, a 9,200, taking on Courtney Cast Iron Casey at 7,000. Calvillo minus 345, Casey plus 285. To me, Calvillo has a huge ground advantage wrestling in BJJ. Casey needs to keep this fight standing. If Calvillo strikes with her, it could get close, although I would still favor Calvillo, who I think is a legit prospect. Casey, you know, is long, has some physical attributes, but ultimately I just think Calvillo is more talented. So Calvillo would be my play, but again, with Vicente Luque right there, women's MMA fight, how high is the ceiling? Joe?
Yeah, so this is my what I believe is going to be the highest scoring female fighter on the card here. Although that I might have to, you know, kind
Jessica
of
Penne is getting more and more interesting the more I look into her.
Yeah, I mean, I love Calvillo and Cash. Casey is extremely easy to take down. Although because she's fairly strong, you know, she may not be as easy to advance on, but you know, everybody can take down Casey. Now, the one reason why I'm not like all in is this is a home fight for Casey. She is an MMA lab gal. You know, gonna have all her coaches there, gonna have fans there, fights at Arizona. Although I love Calvillo. I mean, I love her game. I think she got a wake-up call when she fought Carla Esparza. You know, she maybe didn't take her seriously enough. Coming back off of the marijuana silly crazy suspension for THC, she really looked good in her first fight back very quick. You know, despite her issues in making weight, she looked really, really good. Everybody was kind of backing away a little bit because of her weight issues. I like her here a lot. I even think, although Casey is very hard to finish, she could potentially get the finish. But what I'm looking for here is grappling type points, which is why I really like her in Cash, because I think she has a pretty solid floor. Although her price tag is pretty high, I'm fairly confident that she's going to win. I'm picking Calvillo.
Chris?
Yeah, all the women's fights for me this week have been pretty tough. I've been kind of You know, well, yeah, because this is a fight where you would expect Calvillo to win, and you would expect that the path would be pretty simple. Or take her down, because as Joe said, her takedown defense is hard. I think it's literally south of 25%. It might be like 24, last I looked. So you expect her to be able to take her down at some point, but I also wonder if that happens. I mean, in the fight against in her last fight that you guys mentioned, she really spent a long time kickboxing. In fact, she went for one takedown in the first round, had some success, and then just didn't really go back to it the rest of the fight. It's not even that she tried takedowns and Esparza Esparza blocked her so much as she just didn't go for takedowns. And
but Carla Esparza compared to Courtney Casey.
No, I understand, but it would be different for me if she actually tried and got stopped and then went, okay, well now
but
I guess
she knows where she's going to have the advantage. Like, you know, against Carla, that's not an advantage.
Well,
but it's just my opinion.
But Esparza, I don't think that's an advantage for Calvillo. You think that
Esparza? Exactly. No, exactly. Though she's not going to want to grapple with Esparza because she knows Esparza is a great wrestler.
No. It's Courtney Casey. You think in the stand up, Calvillo is that much better than Esparza is?
Before the improvements we've seen Esparza make, yes, I think she would have thought, I'm going to stand with this chick and I'm going to outbox her.
All right. Well, I mean, fair enough as to what she might have thought, I guess. But even the matchup against Patello, which she ended up getting a takedown and getting the sub there, that was off a caught kick. And before that happened, she was having trouble with the length of Patello, and she could be having trouble with the length here again. I go to Fight Metrics sometimes just to color in the lines and see, because we know that she's going to have to go for a takedown. So her takedown per 15 is like 2. That's not quite what you want to see from somebody who needs to get this fight to the ground. And it sort of makes me nervous because, you know, she's up against a fighter who has a pretty decent boxing game, can throw in combination, goes body head, is a decent-ish counterpuncher, is very stiff and not quick. But I don't really think that's going to be a problem if with Calvillo on the feet, who is a slow-paced kickboxer anyway, who's sort of a single strike. So I think the dynamic is pretty clear, as we often say. If Calvillo gets the takedown, I think it's her fight. But even then, I mean, and I think you guys hit on it, like Casey has an active enough guard that maybe she gives Calvillo some problems there. Maybe she can't sub her out as quickly as she might have, you know, Pro Gonzalez or somebody. But I don't know. It's a tough fight for me. Ultimately, I think I'm picking Calvillo because the takedown defense is just so bad that I think if you give her the fight that she wants, I have to think that she's going to come away with a victory. But I think it's a closer fight than some might think. And I wouldn't really fault anybody for doing contrarian play on Courtney Casey.
All right, co-main event time. Paul Felder, 8,200, taking on James the Textecutioner Vic at 8,000. Line has flipped since opening. James Vic, -120. Paul Felder, +100. I know Joe said Paul Felder has terrible fight IQ, and it's true, which is odd for someone who does commentary for the UFC, but that's what it is. Ultimately, I think he should be better than James Vic just about everywhere. He's got a good sub-defense. I think he's got better takedowns. I think he's the better striker if he can get in range and kind of out-muscle James Vic. Just am I sure that he's not going to stand at the end of James Vic's, you know, that long reach he has and just box with him and make this a close fight that Vic could win? No, I'm absolutely not. Skill for skill, I think Felder's a better fighter. I'm just not confident in his fight IQ. But I will still take him as the pick, even at +100. Chris?
And we had a little bit of conversation about this fight before we went on the air. I like Felder a lot. I think he's a crisp, powerful striker, and I think that he's good at like breaking you down and making reads on you throughout the course of the fight. My problem is that we know kind of where James Vic's blind spot is on the feet, and it's giving him a lot of pressure, backing him up, and making him defend. And as many tall men can't, he also can't. We saw, obviously, the big right hand that knocked him out. Even in that Francisco Trinaldo fight, he had to bail out of pressure and kind of do the sort of mini jog around the cage thing. And I think one of my main problems here for picking Vic is that I think he's going to stand in the center too much and give Vic a fight at range, which is where he's most comfortable, and I think where he can do the most damage. I think he's good at putting his punches together. He's good at fighting long. He's got a good kicking game. He can counterpunch some too, as we saw in that in the Joe Duffy fight, that counter uppercut that led to a finish. I want to pick Felder so bad just because I think I think he might be the more dangerous fighter overall, especially on the feet. And he's really good in the clinch too. But I do wonder if it gets taken there, if Vic won't be able to use that opportunity to get one of his body lock takedowns. I think just thinking about it and gun to my head, I have to take Vic here just because I think he's going to give Felder too – I think Felder's going to give him too much of the kind of fight he wants, and he's going to let him thrive a little bit too much. So, yeah, the pick is Vic.
Joe?
Yeah, so I'm on Paul Felder here. Just a clarification. Paul Felder had bad fight IQ. I am very impressed with his two-year run. You know, beating guys like Stevie Ray, beating guys like DuBronx Oliveira, almost beating Mike, you know, losing a split decision to Mike Perry with a broken arm and cut wide open, you know, at 170, no less. Very impressed with the way Felder has fought over the course of the last 2 years. I think he has gotten a lot smarter. Rufus Sport is a good camp for him. I like him here. I think he is going to out tough Vic. I also think that, you know, Justin Gaethje might have taken, you know, James Vic's soul.
And his hair.
Yeah, and his hair. And the fact that he is a 6'3" fighter cutting to 155. Look, we've seen Instagram photos of Felder. He is in shape and ripped for this fight. His weight cut is on point. I don't know if I could say the same thing for Vic. I'd have to wait to see how he looks. I do like Felder to get inside here and tough it out. I don't know if it's going to go to a decision or get a finish. You know, he is a dog, so there's, you know, the line value is obviously on Vic, which is why you should have some shares of Vic. I am looking to have just a few more shares of Felder, and I will pick Felder to get the win here.
All right, main event time, and it's going to be the same disclaimer as the Lopez-Bermudez fight. Any overanalysis? And we're going to end the call. End the show.
I'm fine with that. I got stuff to do anyway. Let's go.
Cain Velasquez, 9,000, taking on Francis Ngannou at 7,200. Velasquez is the favorite, -160. Jesus. 160. Francis Ngannou, the comeback, is +140. Fight does not go to decision, which I usually don't read on this podcast. It's worth mentioning. -665. That's a big number. I love this fight in GPPs. Either Velasquez is going to take down Ngannou and beat the snot out of him, or he's going to get caught coming in, and Ngannou is going to take his head off. Velasquez coming off a 2.5-year layoff, back problems, all the different things here. Ultimately, I like Cain because he's more polished. Ngannou throws wild hooks, can't stop a takedown. I know that he just knocked out a wrestler in Blades, but Ngannou is a more seasoned fighter. Velasquez is a more seasoned fighter. I think he gets inside, gets a takedown. But what do you think happens? How much do you play each guy? If you have – look, play both guys in GPP for cash games. Play both or don't play either. I wouldn't try and pick this fight. It is – I do think it's closer than the salaries would indicate as the lines have closed. But 9,000, 7,200, load up in GPPs. My pick is Cain Velasquez. Chris, who's your pick in the last fight of the night?
So before I get to that, I have to say that does not go to the distance prop is sort of weird to me. I think we just
say
no.
I don't think Velasquez could stand up for 5 straight rounds.
Well, no, but just because we saw Stipe,
I don't think Velasquez can stand up for 5 straight rounds with his back.
Well, but that's an assumption that you're making. But the fact is, like when I look at this fight, what I see is the last. JDS fight where Cain basically, you know, hammered him out in the clinch, really wore him down. I think that a similar thing is going to happen here. And I think that, I would be more willing to pick Ngannou if he could lead and put pressure at all. He's such an ingrained counter fighter that we literally saw in that Derek Lewis fight where if you don't throw at him, he just won't throw. So I don't think that Cain really has to worry about being in that much danger on the feet as long as he has his priorities straight and goes right in for his takedown. If he spends any length of time on the feet, then yeah. And if he tries to lead or be first in an exchange, that's basically suicide. But I really don't think that happens here. I think that I hope Joe is okay. I really think that I really think that he's just going to grind him out. That could lead to a finish. It could not. But, and of course.
Way to go on a limb.
Huh?
Way to go on a limb.
But if I know, right? Well, this is why they tune in, man. All these
no, like we got hot takes coming up.
That's true. But and it goes without saying too, as long as we're stating the obvious, that Ngannou could catch him. But I think again, as I said, I think that if Ngannou was more of a comfortable striker, more of a comfortable lead striker, I would worry about that way more. As it is, I think Kane just kind of grind him out over. 5 rounds. It could end in finish. I'm really not forecasting that, which is why that line kind of took me by surprise. I could be way wrong.
This is your hot take. Your hot take is done as the main event goes
okay,
distance.
Fair enough. As I said, I give the people what they want when it comes to this stuff. So that's gonna be it. But yeah, I expect Kane to wear on him a gas mount. Maybe a late finish, but you know, it wouldn't surprise me if it went to the bell. But Kane Velasquez is the pick.
Dope.
Yeah. You know, look, I was so burned by Ngannou in his fight against Derek Lewis that, you know, it really kind of turned me off of him, and I was pretty much overexposed to Blades in the last fight. So, you know, with that said, you know, all reports that I hear or the rumors and the whispers that I hear about Kane is that he does not look like the same old Kane, that he looks slower, older. You know, he was never a physical specimen, but, you know, he looks actually kind of, you know, on the side of Dan Kelly, dad bod. You know,
he never had a good physique, though.
Exactly. But what does that mean? Like, okay, so what does that mean here? Man, look, Ngannou, this fight is pretty easy to analyze. I think Ngannou nukes Kane early, you know, Kane grinds out a decision. I'm going to assume that the cardio edge is going to go to Ngannou, but that doesn't mean, like, we saw him last against Stipe, but he, you know, outside of him catching him early in the fight, he really didn't do a whole lot. Yeah, he was able to get up a couple of times, but God, I hate picking Kane having not seen. And by the way, you know, this is crazy matchmaking. Like, why not give Kane a tune-up first? Really interesting fight. I think you should have, I don't see this as a cash fight at all. And I honestly do think that there are some, you don't have to have 100% of your lineups in this fight. I think right now I'm at 75 or 80%. So I do have a 20% fade on this fight as a whole. I am going to pick Kane, but it's not with a supreme amount of confidence, and I will have fairly equal weight in GPPs for both these guys. So I know I can't pick each guy, so I'm gonna like pick Kane to win, but I would recommend having a fairly balanced approach in GPPs.
So just out of curiosity, like, I know because I've seen people going back and forth saying either one, but I see more people on Kane now, which I wasn't sure that's what we were gonna get at the beginning of the week. But what do you think his ownership is going to be based on the price?
I think the ownership of Ngannou is going to be higher.
Okay.
You know,
I think Kane at 40 and Ngannou at 50.
Really?
Wow, that's pretty high.
Holy crap.
I think people are going to shove on this fight.
Well, I hope Luque is high. Well, Luque should be higher owned than Kane. Actually, I hope he's not for selfish reasons. But
I think Luque is going to come in around 35, 40% too.
Yeah. Yeah, could be.
But who knows?
I would hope that Luque would be higher owned than Kane, but maybe not.
All right, let's do some hot takes. We have Chris's hot take. He says the main event will go all 5 rounds.
Just out of curiosity, what kind of odds would I get on that?
I'll look for you, but it's probably like plus 500.
Wait, and so five that goes 5 rounds?
Plus 423.
I'm going to Vegas, boys. Forget it.
I'm going to Vegas in a week and a half.
I'm going in March, actually. Going in March.
Yeah, see? You know, should have worked this out better. Anyway. Got a hot take for us, John?
I have a hot take, but let's see. So Ngannou wins 5-round decision is 11-1. Velasquez wins 5-round decision is 5.5-1.
If anybody wins a decision, I guess it'll be Kane, but it's just, it seems crazy to even think about.
Okay, so my hot take is this. I'm going to give you guys a 9-1 parlay opportunity here.
Oh, boy.
Cynthia Cavillo wins inside the distance. Renan Barral wins inside the distance. Pays 9.25-1 based on current odds on Five Dimes. Not that I'm promoting any one website to use for gambling, but that's what I use to calculate the parlay odds. It's a 9.25-1 parlay. Barral inside the distance and Calvillo inside the distance.
I'm debating between two hot takes. All right, guys, which one of these is hotter? Paul Felder wins inside the distance or Jessica Penne wins inside the distance?
Penne is hotter take, I think.
I'll go Penne inside the distance. Penny inside the distance. All right, guys, that's what we got for UFC Phoenix. Again, thank you to RotoWire. Make sure you go to rotowire.com/free, 10-day free trial to all their paid content. No credit card required. Have any questions for us, make sure and hit us on Twitter at the DFS Sniper, at Real Chris Olsen, at Sun Tzu. Guys in chat, thank you. It has been fun. You guys got anything to add before we get out of here?
No, man. Next week, I believe, is Prague, right?
Yes. JDS and Derek Lewis.
Oh, wow. Speaking of, huh?
There we go. All right, guys. Good luck in your contest. We'll see you next week here on Fight IQ.